Welcome to another episode of Israel Tech. I have here the co-founders of Auditech. Auditech, Israel Tech, it's kind of fun to say. We have Eli Edry and we have Ronnie Barry. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for coming here.
Awesome. I wish people can see this view. We would use it in the background, but the light, the sunlight would ruin it. We're at Point by Azrael. Mm-hmm. What floor are we on? 61?
61. It's the highest floor in Israel.
No.
For now. Yeah.
61, that's it?
61.
Yeah,
no more than that.
Huh, kind of disappointing. You would think with all of the retail, with all of the real estate issues, we'd get a little higher. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about kind of what Auditech does. And then I found actually your background very different than most of the people that we've interviewed and kind of want to go into it. But first, what is Auditech? Ellie, I'm going to let you make it.
I'll take that. So Auditech is basically the idea of taking an accounting services that traditionally would being performed manually, would take a lot of time, a lot of effort, would cost a lot of money, and the results were mediocre at best, and to take it, to make it techy, technological, automated, with the best IT solution you can have, and actually take it to the level it's supposed to be. So this is like in high level Auditech.
Now, audit doesn't sound sexy. How do you get into it?
I think Corny looks looking very sexy.
You are what you do for a living, I guess.
Exactly.
Basically, it's the point that audit's not sexy. You know, it's not cyber. It's not
AI,
other buzzwords. But it has a real need in the market,
mm-hmm.
because every public company does audit.
Right.
They does it manually.
When you say manually, what does that mean? They're like, hey, open all of your books and then they need to go.
No, open all of your software, but take screenshots.
Uh-huh.
Sit with the admin. Okay, take me another screenshot. Waste the time. Give me an Excel. I will write the Excel right there again and again and again. You know, the accounting... today, accounting, you have a lot of juniors, so they need to give them something to do. So it's hours and hours and hours.
Oh, that's so fascinating,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So I think to summarize, yes, we're not AI, we're not health, we're not cyber, we're not something sexy. But in our field, the problem is really exists.
Right.
Okay? And there is a real need.
So for your industry, it's sexy.
Exactly.
So we're first off, when did you guys find the company? When was this founded?
3 years ago.
So, I mean, it seems like some kind of software product solution mm-hmm. to make all of it easier. What took so long for such a service to come to be established?
We're just in the beginning, and I wouldn't say we established. We just started to launch it.
Right. So what took so long? I feel like this should have been already developed 10 years ago. Not you guys, someone else.
So we are in a field, an industry, which is really, really heavy regulated. Okay. Our regulator is not Israel, is not the US government, is the SEC. Okay.
It's like the worst.
It's the worst that could happen. And you have standards that the big four accounting firms are adopt and the wide known is spreading to get in and penetrate to this market and provide a solution in the level that you require to provide them. It's not just technology. It's also to know the game, to know the rules, to be part of the game. And it takes a lot of time because think about it, audit happens once a year. So
right.
Every year we need to do from beginning. So our jump off from on annual basis. This is our job. Okay? So it takes a lot of time and this is where like we're not completely in the game of fundraising for 18 months and then go. It's something much more slower but much more established with long-term vision. Let's say 10 years old map, okay, let's be this how we see it.
So why is the SEC so obnoxious? For the people that don't know, the Securities and Exchange Commission, why are they so difficult as regulators?
I don't think they're difficult. I think what they do is very, very important. And the regulation they're having, it's called SOX, S-O-X, Sarbanes and Oxley. Okay, it's here for 20 years. And it's very, very important regulation, but actually the idea of this regulation is extremely smart and it's something that companies should have. But to actually implement it in the companies, it's completely difficult. Even I would say insane. Okay, and let's give a little bit details to understand it more. What's happened today in the accounting field, let's say 20 years ago before SOX regulation, before Sarbanes and Oxley, companies would come, the auditor would come, show, okay, I have $1 million USD revenue in the balance sheet or in the profit and loss. Then this is more accurate. Let's be accountant. I have $1 million. Please give me all the invoices, the match. They have 1 million. Amazing. But then what happened? Enron collapsed and Andreessen collapsed and companies reported on financial statement, but it was rubbish.
Right.
Right. So
I mean, so the SEC is not doing that good of a job, are they?
Okay, so what source come and say, I don't care you put $1 million USD, show me all the way through this million to this $1 million in the profit and loss report is correct. And this is a game changer because now you're not coming to
check. When did this happen? After 2008? When was this introduced?
2000.
Before.
Before,
right.
It's even before, okay. 2008. It's even before. So the idea is the auditor is now responsible to audit the customers, his customer and the public companies, on the process of the financial reporting as well.
Right.
And for this, we put what we call internal controls.
Right.
This changed the industry of accounting completely, okay? Because there are accountants like me that know to do internal control. And this is what they know to do. We don't do taxes. We don't do other stuff. We know to do internal controls. But this whole world is completely manual. It's customized per customer. It takes a lot of time every year. And difficult to actually put something valuable and to show to the SEC how a process is working like it's supposed to do, okay? And this is why it's difficult to automate. This is why no one got into this area, because it's difficult, okay? It's not the same for everyone, and this is why it's very customized. But this is what exactly we're changing, okay?
Uh-huh.
So we took one niche from this world, which is the IT audit, which is significant. And as we move with the year, it's much more and more significant, because everything today is IT. And what we make sure, we test everything regarding the control that related to IT. It could go to 50% of this audit easily.
Mm.
And this is what we test. And this is what we automate. And this is what we provide. And we increase the standard and reduce the time to take there. So just a win-win for everyone.
So what stop is, and I'm assuming it's much cheaper too, since it's largely automated,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
And what do the regulators think about what you're doing?
So here in Israel,
uh-huh.
we got grant and funding from the Israeli SEC, from the Israeli stock, from the Israeli security agency.
Right.
Okay. So we got funding from them because they believe in this cause.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine like the American, like the SEC just like doing that. There's funding, right? It's like they're always trying to shake you down.
Yes and no, because you know, I just read an article of the PCOB. PCOB is the accounting, okay, that the accountants, the CPAs in the US, put their own regulator on themselves to maintain higher standards.
What, GAAP? You talking about? What?
No, not GAAP.
Oh, the AAC.
They call it PCAOB. This is like the...
What is it? Say it again.
PCAOB.
What does that stand for?
So
something accounting.
Yeah, something accounting. And this is the body, the regulator. It's like internal regulator. Instead of,
right.
Okay, so the auditors test themselves to make sure they have higher standards. And then
right.
the SEC can be, okay? So from one hand, it's like very tricky, because from one hand, they want to provide better audit. The customer, the auditors, everyone, the SEC. But from other hand, it's very difficult to document it and show the evidence, because I heard one CFO say...
Well, why is it so hard to document and show the evidence?
This is exactly what Ronnie earlier said. Okay.
Because you need to take every screenshot. You need every
right.
IT admin.
But they were doing this before, right? But let me ask you, would the SEC... When would they check... Okay. When the SEC or some other organization wants to, maybe because you want to acquire it, you want to audit this information.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, would they actually go through all these screenshots and everything?
Of course.
Yes. Everything?
Not the SEC, but the auditors themselves.
The auditors.
Of course.
Holy crap.
And
that got it. So
every
you're saving.
Year.
So,
do it every year.
So you're saving the time and the money, the resources
exactly.
of the company that has to
exactly.
prepare it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also saving the time, the money, the resources of
the,
of the regulators and the auditors
exactly.
that need to go
exactly.
and review it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another.
And there's transparency.
Another layer in the.
And we increase the quality.
Right.
Okay.
The quality, the transparency, the speed, the
exactly.
availability,
give you
access.
Like an example, okay? One of the things we do, auditors, the test samples. Okay, for example, if you have some user that left the company, they can't test 5, 10. But if the corporate has 1,000, so it's test only 10. And if those 10 are okay.
Right, it's an example, right?
We don't we don't use this approach. So this is like an earthquake in our profession. Right. We test everything. Wow. Because it's a computer.
Right, it's easy. You just run it.
It's easy, exactly.
So what are the inputs? Like, what do they look for? Like, I want to know, like, what are they asking the software, the solution that you provide? What are they asking? Or do you automatically provide, you know, the top 50 most interesting or relevant reports automatically for them?
So no, so we got into the standard of the accounting. We don't come and change.
You don't
the
like,
purpose. The purpose right. is right.
Right.
Okay. The goal is right. The goal you is to show that. All IT systems for the companies are legible, are valid, are supposed to be, okay? And we go with the same audit purpose. We don't change anything. We don't bring new approach in this sense. The way we do the audit, this is what we change. This, by the way, is our tagline, the way audit is done. We change this approach and we go and we aim for much quality. We reduce effort because we leverage technology to provide it to our customers. This is the idea.
So you're disrupting and saving so much time, man hours, everything. Who's opposing this? Usually whenever there's change or a disruptor, there's always someone old school trying to
of course.
Trip you up.
So before, who are these before people? That, you forgot to mention like, okay, we save money, but this is not the main point because sometimes to automate also costs money.
Right.
But the main point is we reduce the risk completely.
Right.
Okay, CEO and CFO sign by themselves, not behind the corporate,
right.
about the effectiveness right. of their internal control every year. And they rely on a sample that someone did. And maybe it's working, maybe not. Now it's like an extra on the organization.
Right.
And providing. And this is like, how much do you pay for eliminating risk in your organization?
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
Because even though 0.01%, it could be potentially catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't cover that.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And now let's go for a question. So the answer is clear, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Everyone hates you.
Everyone hates us.
It's because you're Jewish.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, I would say it's looked like this way. Okay. So everyone say they want it.
Right.
Everybody agree the direction. Everybody say it's correct, including the PCOB. But in the same time, everybody afraid to do it and to adopt it. Because there is a
why?
Standard. Because
people are used to the old.
People are used to it.
Right.
You pay taxes. Why? Because you're used to it.
Right.
And this is how things have
now
been done.
Now you're speaking my language.
Exactly. and it's disruptive. So in this sense, it's very challenging. And
right.
one of our main challenges in Auditech is to work with those forces, not against those forces.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and working with them, with each one of them.
You couldn't do it. Do you think if you were to come and disrupt it in a way that you didn't feel like that you were a partner, they wouldn't even let you move?
Exactly.
No.
You have no choice because it's so established.
Exactly.
See, it's fascinating because there's tech, I mean, not just in Israel, also in America, whatever, is that as a new industry, it's not, there's minimal regulation.
Exactly.
Which is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're taking an old industry that is overregulated.
Exactly.
And you're using tech, right, to keep an old industry. That industry is not going away.
No.
But you're introducing technology to not just help a regulated industry, the regulation within the regulated industry.
Exactly. We are like, in some sense, like the government should create us.
Right. Yeah, ideally, right.
In some sense.
Right.
Okay, the public that enjoying those reports should create us. So this is what happens. So we're disrupting, but from the inside, not from the outside.
Right.
We're not coming and throwing the old and saying...
Right, because they won't let you in.
They won't let us.
Yeah. Right.
We're working together with them, with cooperation, with partnership.
It's like how the government thinks about Bitcoin. It's
exactly.
Like, they don't want it. All right.
Exactly.
Which is why they do
so this is our approach. This is why it takes time, because we go with the flow and not against it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also why we're winning.
You're moving along with the regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of like part of the solution. So you're a disruptor and within it. So how much of your disruption leads your growth? How much of the part that people see you as partners within
mm-hmm.
your industry leads to your growth?
I think that in the beginning, we thought that we need to work against the
right.
You know, the forces, the big four.
Uh-huh.
But moving forward, we understand that we need to work with them. To partnership with them, along them.
Because you tried to disrupt and you're like, this isn't going anywhere?
Kind of, you know.
What was that moment? When did you, what happened or what things happened that you just felt like you weren't making progress when you were trying to be an outside disruptor?
basically, you know, we are a small startup trying to play in the field of the biggest companies in the world. So, and within the regulation and everything else, so honestly, it's a dead end. And then we understand that we need to go along with them and partnership with them and explain them and show them what we actually do. So we start a partnership on some of the customers, did some POCs, and from one to another, they understand, okay, they have something. And now I think we are like 50% of our work is partnership with the Big Four, and 50% we work within companies without any relationship to the Big Four, but with a relationship, because every company we are in it, one of the Big Four is also there.
Right.
Because they are the auditor.
Right.
So today we are in the place that we are, you know, put the regulation for how to accept Auditech.
Uh-huh. So you're talking, so a lot of partnerships going on. What partnerships kind of helped you with funding or whatnot to help you kind of get Auditech off the ground?
So I think the partnership is less relevant to our funding. The funding came from our investors.
Uh-huh.
But the partnership actually let us allow us to validate the business itself.
Right.
Okay, because eventually when we partner with partner, we do business together, even if it's like straight with them or via the customer, things are moving, revenue is generated, and Auditech is something that actually happened in here. So in this sense, the partners are very, very important, okay? We work with them, we create together with them the procedure, how to rely on Auditech. It's like crazy in our world, okay? How to use technology for audit purposes, and they help us do it. So in this sense, we're like very in this ecosystem of accounting, CPA, Big Four. So in this sense, they're growing with us in the sense of leveraging technology in our customers.
Amazing. So who are these partners? Who are these people that
all
work
of them? All of them. We have small and medium firms. We have the Big Four accounting firms.
Right. Okay.
We work with everyone.
You were telling me off camera that you were working with Mamram or something. What is that?
Yes. So in one of our points, we were part of the Mamram alumni program. We are very fortunate.
What is Mamram?
What is Mamram? Mamram is like the IT unit of the IDF.
Like IT unit.
Yeah. So and we're like dealing with IT. So it makes a lot of sense. So in this sense, they were very helpful for us. They were mentoring us, introduction to people, everything that a small startup need in the beginning. So Mamram.
Did you do IT in the army?
No, actually.
What'd you do?
So I used to serve in the submarine in Shmonim Atayim as well, which is the intelligence unit.
And I was an officer in the combat engineering.
Uh-huh.
So no IT, just
bombs. No IT. That's hilarious. And well, first of all, what's it like to be in a submarine? How did you go from submarine? Is the submarine related to the intelligence?
Yes.
Because you did one after the other?
So I prefer not to talk about it too much in front of the camera, but like...
What part, the submarine or the intelligence? I'm not going to push you. Both of it?
Both of it, but we can talk about the ecosystem of the submarine.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Okay.
But not exactly what we did, but yes, it's related clearly.
Yeah, I'll be honest. We interviewed, I won't say who, from whoever that was... pretty successful in Shimon at the time. He's like, I can't talk about it. And I just asked a little bit more. And later he's like, it's really inappropriate. To like push. I'm like, I didn't know. I'm sorry. But Israelis were pushy until they got pushed. That's a sweet guy. What's it like working in a submarine?
Wow. It was, I think, one of the best experiences I had in my life.
I don't know what you can answer. Can I ask questions? You can just say no.
Yes.
How long are you in a submarine and would you go and come back?
As much as needed.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
How many people are in the submarine?
As much as needed.
As many as needed. Or the opposite, as little as possible, right?
Yes.
In a sense. And then the intelligence was correlated with the submarine. Did it lead to the Shimon HaMatayim? Because most people that we've interviewed, Shimon HaMatayim, have no connection to
the
Navy or the field or combat or anything.
So I grew from the Navy.
I grew
from the Navy, and only then I went to the Shimon HaMatayim. So for me, in terms of connection and experience and knowing people, it was crucial and super important. And I was very fortunate and lucky to have the best people from the submarine, the best people from Shimon HaMatayim in my life. And together after that, it's like every corner stone in my life.
It's amazing how that happens when you look
got
back,
it,
right?
And got it together.
This is one of the themes.
This is one of the themes.
So first of all, what attracted you to work in it, to go and work in a submarine? It doesn't sound like
it took me
the most...
Well, because the training over a year and a half.
No, but like what made you decide or why were you recruited? How does that just kind of, I know it's kind of a topic.
So it's like.
I think when you are 18, before you go to the army, you don't know a lot.
Yeah, that's
and
why.
And they go, okay, come to the submarine. I think you have a kibbutz. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, I'm going.
And you're like, this is cool. I'm underwater for a while. These people are cool. You make probably, you probably have close of friends you can make. Anything in the army, I would think, is probably submarine, right?
Yeah.
Is there any other?
It's very Israeli, you know?
Well, I mean, every army, every navy has a submarine.
Yes.
But...
Not every navy has a submarine.
Okay, fine. And any...
Any big navy has a submarine.
Did you say Israel has a big navy?
Hmm?
Did you say Israel has a big navy?
No, very small.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, submarines are the future. I'm not going to get into that. It's a whole other thing. I'll find the right person that can tell more about that. So then you went to Shimon HaTaim, 8200 intelligence unit from there. Wait, so how long were you serving in submarine in the Navy? How long?
So I served 5 years like in the mandatory service, and I would say until age 30, like reserve service. I used to come once a week or something.
Right.
And
once a week you went in?
Once a week.
Wait, what do you do when you go back once a week?
I did what you're supposed to do. A lot of help to the system, actually.
But it wouldn't just make more sense to just, I'm just thinking economically, to just hire you full time. Because like once a week, where's the, because it's pulling you away from your work once a week.
But my life were in different direction. You know, I was, after 5 years, I was in a point in my life, I didn't need to decide if I move with the military and stay for a career in the military or go to do business. And eventually I understand that my dream was to be a businessman and not a career in the military. So I pushed this way and moved, but I was always have a warm place in the military. The people are the best in the world.
Yeah.
I had a great time of life, so I was very pleased and happy to contribute more.
I got
many new friends in that. I got many projects like that I did and done that provided me a lot of good sense of what I'm capable of. And so for me, like the service in some sense kept until the age of 30. So.
Right. And when, and you were doing engineering? What did you say?
Combat engineering.
Combat engineering.
Yeah.
So what does basically any engineering having to do actually in combat? So what does that mean?
I mean, combat engineering is the all the mines, the bombs,
that's right,
even bridges. So
right.
But during my military service, I did like every other field soldier. I don't know how to say it in English.
Like
everyone else, exactly.
Okay, so then after you guys left, and you didn't know each other then.
No.
And then you, how did you, so neither of you really did anything with IT or regulation audit.
I did.
So, okay, but you can't talk about it.
But I can't talk
about
it.
That's fine. Okay, so how do we get here? Like, I know there's a gap. Where did you guys meet? How did you, walk us through from the Army to here.
So I left Army, I was 23. A year after that, I found myself in KPMG.
I love how you found yourself.
I found myself.
You know, I interviewed there.
You interviewed there.
After my MBA in 2009, I was living in Yerushalayim, and it was like two and a half, I was newlywed. So it was 13 years ago. And I had to go to the Tachana Merkazi, take a bus to the Tachana Merkazi, Tel Aviv. And then I would do it just all the way by the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then.
No, this is BWC, by the way.
No, wait, who's Cooper, what's
PwC.
Oh, okay, never mind. I interviewed at PwC, not KPMG.
Yeah.
So my teacher for my MBA was from KPMG. And I was like, this is 2.5 hours door to door. And I was like, how much do you pay? And it was like 5,500 shekels, was like minimum wage. And I was like, well, where's the career in finance? And I was like, man, there's such an opportunity for Israel to become a financial hub. And I think it's, especially with just New York and London with, they've gone very like socialist in a sense.
Yes, regulated.
There's such an opportunity to become financial, but whatever. So there. So you went to KPMG, and then you ended up at PwC.
Yes, I spent 5 years in KPMG, and this is where I learned the IT audit.
Right.
I did other stuff, but this is where I learned IT, finance, accounting. I did it in parallel to my school.
So, but you use your IT experience from the Army, no accounting experience, to get the job
at
KPMG.
And the accounting experience I got on the way while I was studying, and together.
Oh, at school.
At school, at university,
Hebrew University.
Yes, and I did the same route every day. And back then there was no Zoom, video conference, anything while
it's
I was
brutal.
Student. It was brutal, but it allowed me to grow up really fast.
Right. What did you do on
the bus?
Catch up
everything. something bus, something on a TV.
This is like before the internet, right?
Yes.
Before
the train. That's what I'm saying.
Before
I remember.
The train, before everything.
I would carry. I remember I had like I had a physical Hebrew English dictionary that I carried with me.
It was hectic. But I was young. I had a
You know, when you're young, you don't care. You walk hours.
Exactly, and this like allowed.
You even work in a submarine.
Submarine, yes. It was much difficult. Yeah. Than that. So yes, so this allowed me to gain a lot of professional, because most of my guys, my teammates, just started to do their internship after they finished school.
Right.
So after, when my teammates from the class started, I already have been with 5 years of experience.
Wow.
And then I moved to PwC. I had a big opportunity over there.
What did you do over PwC? What did you recruit for?
And at KPMG, I did more like consulting, IT advisory, helping with implementing IT system and so on. Much more varied, much more, I would say, much more changing between customer to customer, all kinds of experiences I had. And then at PwC, they called me, okay, we need the team leader for IT audit.
Mm.
So you got your own team, some employees, and I started to learn this profession deeply. And this is the point where I understand there is a problem to solve. And this were also I met Ronnie. So
maybe at PwC,
PwC.
So we had. So how did you get to PwC, or how did you get from the Army to PwC?
Well, I studied industrial engineering. Then
at Hebrew University in Jerusalem also?
No, in Shinkal.
Where's that?
Shinkal, near Tel Aviv.
Okay.
For
the audience.
So Shinkar is a college in Tel Aviv. Then in my study, I met the IT,
mm-hmm.
And a bit of coding, and I understand this is something that interesting me, how to improve things in life using software.
Uh-huh.
And my first job was in Intel, and then I went to work with a freelancer implementing CRM software.
Mm-hmm.
After 3 years there, I moved to PwC,
mm-hmm.
to a group called IT Consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So I consulted companies, small, large corporates, on their IT software, on the processes with using our software. And my group and Ellie's group is kind of working in parallel. So I met the Rally, a funny story.
Any funny stories?
No, you know, the real meet with Ellie was because I had an employee that I wanted to fire, but in PwC Incorporated, you know, it's very hard to fire someone.
Yeah, talk about regulations.
Yeah. So it's very hard to fire someone. You need, okay, did you speak with him? Did you give him another chance? And then someone said, okay, Ellie's team needs hands. So let's try to move this employee to Ellie. And
this is like the employees you're helping replace in the industry. Just the extra hands.
Back then we were in the industry.
Wait, now who does, if this person watch this interview, would they know it is him or her?
I don't know.
Maybe one.
You should send this person a thank you.
Yes, we should tell him a thank you.
Right? This person's like, this is a guy God sent. This person's incompetent.
Yes, and then I think we spoke at 8 or 9 in the morning, and by, I don't know, noon, Eli called me, listen, it's not working.
It's like, Hunger, it's your problem now. Hang up.
Yeah. And back then we met. After, I think, a few months later, Eli left PwC.
Uh-huh.
And
because of that guy. That is probably the most unique story about two founders met. It's always far more like networking or this and that.
No.
But in a way, like, it's networking in the classic sense. We were working together and all of that.
Work together.
But it's not like the stereotypical tech thing.
No.
That's
so disturbing.
That's really funny.
Not from spending my time, not from the military.
Or not
from
this, or from that, or through a connection, or through a VC, or anything like that. It's because through an employee that sucked.
Yeah, we're colleagues in PwC, and had a mutual employee, and this is it.
So you moved on.
And I moved on.
To,
I founded Auditech.
And you're still at PwC.
And he was still at PwC.
Got it. He came on as a co-founder after this. Okay, cool. So you started Auditech. You were still at PwC. Tell, What made you decide to found it? Obviously, you know, we were talking about obviously what you saw, but was there like a moment where you were like, God, this is so bad that I need to fix this?
2 years moment.
It was just 2 years of just dread.
Yes. And I moved and I tried to do stuff in the system and it didn't work because of the system. And eventually I had the opportunity with my current investor. I decided to fix it, change it, and
wait, how did you meet your current investor?
By a friend from the submarine.
From the submarine. Yeah. Okay, so the army always comes back.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me, Ellie, you need to go speak with this person.
Wait. This was a friend you're always in touch with and you were just updating on life?
So we slept actually together 7 months in the same bunk in while training for the submarine. So we were like pretty good friends. And he knew my industry because he also has CPA. And he told me, Ellie, you need to go to speak with this person. His investor is looking to solve problems in the compliance industry.
Mm.
Ah, perfect. I met him and we decided after one and a half hour conversation, it was very lovely. We fell in love in each other and we decided this is the time to leave everything and start it. And after, a week after that, I met with this board. It was the middle of COVID, so it was in Zoom. They approve it and we start the project of Auditech.
Amazing. And then, okay, so you were like, okay, let's solve this issue.
Yes.
What was the first thing you did? Like, at what point did you know, like, you were making progress or as opposed to, because so many people start here. They go, you know, they get maybe a little seed,
mm-hmm.
and then it doesn't go anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
So I think what I did, I don't think I did differently, but I think this is what the right way to do it. Maybe not the only right, but one of the right way to do it. So I said, okay, I know I have a big problem. I know the problem very well. I lived it. I don't need to interview anyone
right.
else to understand there is a problem. But it's not mean I know how to solve it. I definitely don't know how to solve it.
I love this. Wait, you didn't know how to solve
it. No.
You knew that there was a problem.
I knew there was a problem.
So you started a company without a solution.
Exactly.
You started with a problem.
Yes.
And no solution.
No solution. I had like, okay, I know where it's supposed to be. And
right.
I know that the problem is supposed to be like a click of a button.
Right. Should we just run?
Yes.
And then it spits it out for you.
Exactly. And I know there's like 10,000 problems to mitigate.
Right.
Okay.
How do you start?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you start?
Actually, it's very easy. The first obvious step. And you know what's the first obvious step?
To
get customers.
Ah, yeah. Okay, well, how to get a customer from the product?
I'm from the industry, right?
Okay.
Okay, so I went and I made a long list of all the possible customers in Israel that can use it, public companies. I went one by one. And then I started to interview them, but...
Wait, how did you get introduced? Were you like, because I worked at PwC, was it a partner?
If I knew them, it was easy, but you know, I spoke with, I don't know, 100 companies.
Right.
I haven't known any one of them. So this is the startup work. This is the founder work.
That's the grind.
This is the mental, this is to be in the trenches. This
right.
is the actual work. And you go and speak with each one of them and ask them how they imagine the solution, what they would like to have. And then you develop from conversation. In the beginning, you just come to the conversation. And I remember like the last conversation I had, like to design the idea, I actually had a small MVP and still not engineer, right? But like something ran on the screen a little bit more than a slideshow. And I said, okay, if we do this and this, and then I got the reaction and if I see this smiling, okay, let's go. And I think it took us almost a year to write the first codes of like lines of codes, maybe around 9 months. And it was very challenging to hire the right engineers. It took us a lot of time. And then we write the code. But when we wrote the code, we actually know what we need to solve, how to solve it. We had a really good MVP approach. And yes, so this was the beginning.
You were saying that you got a grant from something from the IT department in the army?
Me?
Yeah.
No. The grant is from the Israel Security Authority.
Oh, okay. The securities, not security.
Yes.
Security. Okay.
They also security.
Yeah. I don't want people to think like
mm-hmm.
security, like cybersecurity.
No, not cybersecurity.
Like the SEC security.
Like the SEC, the Israeli
yeah,
SEC.
Yeah.
So they actually, they have like, they fund, okay, startup companies in the area.
Do other countries have their SEC fund or no? I feel like they would, I don't think they would because they would see it as like playing favorites or potential to be corrupt. Which is ironic.
I'm not so sure, but like eventually what we did, we pitched our idea to them. We explained them. It was a long process, but not too long. pretty fair. And we didn't ask for a lot of money, but we wanted like...
How much did you ask for?
We asked for. So we wanted the recognition of what we do. And we got it. And they say, okay, guys, we are the regulator. We understand what you're doing. It's important. Good luck. And they give us something in their name and the brand on it.
That's pretty awesome, because if I can ever think of all the interviews I've done, of the ultimate stamp of approval with the check,
mm-hmm.
or the network and the connections, and they've had other successful startups, is the fact that your regulator body,
mm-hmm. exactly,
who's saying, I'm coming here to make regulation better and easier and faster, is giving you money.
Exactly.
Was that like your main selling point for you to be able to, was that a primary selling point for you to be able to go ahead and put this in front of prospects?
Absolutely. I mean, prospect, if we had it, okay. When we came to the Israel Security Authority, we already had like several customers, around 15, 20 in, and we have big contracts. And if we didn't have it, they wouldn't put their money in.
Right.
Because it's not good enough to have an idea, you should show execution.
I agree.
So at this point, we had enough execution and good enough idea, so they will support us.
Uh-huh.
So both of these factors tell them, okay, let's go and do it with Onitech.
Amazing.
Yes.
And so at what point did this young man, Mr. Berry, when did you come along?
Almost 2 years ago, at the beginning of 2021.
Mm-hmm. Was there only Ellie at the company then?
No.
Maybe I will start how come I started.
Yeah.
Okay, so at some point we had a few customers, we had a product, but we didn't know how to implement it. And then I remember that I had my friend, my colleague from PwC, Ronik, that this is what he do for his living.
Implement things.
Exactly. So we had a job description of system implementer, like Onitech system implementer. And we reached out with Ronnie. And I think the first time he refused.
Yeah. Why'd you refuse?
No, I think in the beginning it was...
It was a little bit different spec.
It was different, and I think it was a smaller what I need to be to do. Just implement something, and I thought I need to do something bigger. And then we decided to speak a few months from now. Okay, let's see if something will come up.
We'll circle back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
What changed that made you change your mind?
I think first of all, you know, on my private life or my private thinking about the job that I want to do, I understand that what I did in PwC, I get to a certain, you know, top or something that, okay, I did it, I love it, it's enough. And I want to search for my next adventure. And then Eli called me again. Listen, I have another job description. what do you think? I will send it to you and let's...
You should have sent him that employee that connected you, guys.
And he sent it to me and I said, okay, this is something that I think much more for me. And I thought, okay, I will say, Eli, okay, come on. And he will say, okay, come on. He sent me a home assignment.
Yeah, what was it?
Of course. Everyone in Onitech do.
Wait, what was the home assignment? I want to hear from you. What was the home assignment?
The home assignment was to plan an implementing process of Onitech. And then I thought on everything that I learned and want to do, and I didn't know what Onitech especially do, but I know about IT, I know about companies, I know about implementing software. So I did the home assignment, sent it back, I think, at the last minute that I had, because you know how it's like, you know, we have, okay, send it by Tuesday, I will send it on Wednesday, and something comes up every time that you want.
Always,
if you want to do something. But then we spoke about the home assignment, about Onitech, about how I see me within Onitech, how well you see me or Onitech grow. And we decided to...
Amazing. So tell me about a little bit about your actual like clients and kind of like, how did you... Are you doing all the sales, I assume, since you were the original founder?
The whole team, but yes, me as well.
Do you bring the whole team on for a sales call?
No, but everyone.
No, I know. I mean, the few people. Yeah. How much do you lead? Do you have any American clients?
Yes.
How do you able to get? That's one of the hardest things for companies getting started, Israeli tech companies, is how they enter the American market, especially when it's an old industry and they have their own SEC and their own regulations and all of that. So in a sense, did your product have to adapt for the American market, change a little bit?
Okay, so regarding the product itself, luckily that the regulation that the Israeli company used is like Israeli companies trading in the US. So
right.
From the beginning,
it was already.
The Israeli regulated was copy paste from the American regulated. They just add I to the SOX.
Perfect. It's like SOX. F16I.
Exactly the same thing. So for us, from the beginning, it was developed to the American market, in this sense. And it was perfectly fit to the Israeli market as well. It's not like taxes,
right?
In this sense. So in this sense, we didn't have the problem, but of course, like completely different culture, completely different people. I'm not from the industry, and from the Israeli industry, which is not the same.
Right. Do they look down on that? Do they find that to be strange?
So what?
The fact that look, it's like, hey, I'm being regulated from their perspective, right? And I'm American originally. Like, okay, I'm being regulated by the SEC. Mm-hmm. All I know is America, because America is so large and so disconnected from the rest of the world geographically in time zones. And then here's some startup from the other side of the world is going to help me with my regulation. You're not part of my culture. You didn't have to deal with the SEC the way they see it their entire life. Like, why am I talking to you?
Great question. It's happening to us all the time. But eventually, okay, let's take some of our Israeli customers, which are tech publicly traded customers, our customer, public companies.
Can you say who they are? Are you allowed to say?
Yes, of course. They're on the website. Okay. And they were like our design partners, companies like Fiverr and Perion. They're huge. They're enormous.
Right. Yeah, Perion's huge.
Okay. So company like Perion, that I don't know what, like 6 subsidiary recently.
Right.
Okay. And then you go to American company in the same industry and you tell them you work with Perion. They're like, okay. So you pass.
Right.
So it's all through our customers. And yes, we have this challenge. And if I knew how to figure this out, we probably wouldn't sit here. We wouldn't sit here with in bigger office with much more employees, but we still figure this out. And we are on the journey. We are on the journey. Yes.
It's so fascinating because there's a learning lesson here. Mm-hmm. Is that if you're an Israeli tech company getting started, and obviously you want to be able to penetrate the European or the American markets, which are much larger, working with Israeli companies that are already basically established.
Mm-hmm.
There, as far as any Americans concerned, they assume they're American company, and Payoneer is an American company. They don't know that it's Israeli, so that's actually an easy way to get the client and let them think that you're already working with a colleague of theirs.
Correct.
So it's a smart, it's an easy in.
So there is a very traditional. Okay, I met with a lot of VCs, and one of them told me, Eli, how much revenue do you have? X, and he told me how many of them were from American customer, and back then we didn't have. So tell me, you have zero. And I told him, okay. And this is I got it. Probably it won't be fit for you. So the approach, at least with me and my investor and our strategy, is first establish in Israel where we are strong, where we have connection, where we can actually deliver, where we can, the product is not perfectly done from the first day. We ran with the market as fast as we could and we improve it daily, okay? It's not perfect. We also fix it and improve it. It's a never-ending cycle. But if we do it with an Israeli customer that knows your language, can speak with you, can tell him, hey.
Yeah, this is amazing.
A few minutes will be sorted out. It's much easier to grow and to get to the point that you can go to the American market and to be good enough. Without guessing, with working, bring a huge product, and then you guess its fit. So we're not guessing. We're actually working and customer come to us, and this is the idea.
If an Israeli founder would, let's say in the industry, would come to you and ask you for advice, hey, I'm just building this thing up, I want to get into the American market, obviously, what advice would you give them?
I don't think I'm an expert for that. Maybe ask me in a few years and I would be
after a lesson. Come on, throw something out there.
But I think eventually, business talk.
Right, just get customers.
And serve them so they will be happy and focus on delivery and delivery and delivery and make them happy. And this is how business is done. Nobody cares how the product is look like maybe someone, but usually it's not so important. Nobody cares about lots of stuff that people think they care. People care about business, and if you bring business to the table, the rest will be sorted out.
Right.
So this is what me, Ronnie, and the whole team believes in. And
amazing.
And we are here for the customer. One of like our agenda is the customer is the king. We want the customers to be happy,
uh-huh.
to be satisfied with Auditech.
Uh-huh.
So
we do everything that they will be satisfied, even if the product, you know, doesn't do exactly what they want to do. So we do it. Eventually,
exactly.
We do it.
What do you mean? You just give me an example. I didn't really understand.
Yeah, you know.
DDH, like we close one scope.
We close one scope, and the sales and Ellie came to me. Okay, we sign an American company. This is the scope, and okay, let's go. And I think 2 weeks after we start the project, the scope doubled itself or tripled itself, and not for everything we had a solution.
Mm.
But we managed to find a solution.
Wait, did you already say, oh, yeah, well, I can do it? And then you're like, fuck, let me go find out how to do it.
No.
You can't, that doesn't work with Americans.
No, it's not working with
in
no
the industry,
one.
Yeah,
we don't
know,
work
know.
This way.
Right.
If we don't know how to do it, we say we don't know how to do it.
So, but then, so my question is, the reason why I asked then, if you say you don't know how to do it, is there's no one else they assume can do it because no one else had the software, the solution, the infrastructure in the organization to do it.
The thing is that we need to tweak some things to make it work as they should, as they expect it to do.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, to solve the scope that eventually grow. But at the end, we are, by the end of the month, by the end of the year, now the audit is need to finish.
Yeah.
And the customer is happy.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Now, does this mean now you have another scope that you now then go and now try to sell to other clients or to new prospects? It's like you
not
have
done.
More tools in your toolbox.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes.
I love that opportunity. I love how business leads
so
to other opportunities,
from
other people.
To customers.
So each customer always brings on something a little bit different and that
exactly.
makes you improve.
More
and then
than
you
a
can,
little bit.
Okay, more than a little bit.
Yeah, and then we have another client that was happy about the product and said, okay, next year I want another feature. I want to give me a quote for this feature.
Do you mean like what kind of features are they looking for? Just to be able to pull up reports and certain their...
Yes, so there are like many problems in this regulation.
But this is for them, is this for to help the regulators or is this for them internally?
Internally.
Internally, right? Because it's unique.
But
they unique
need
questions.
For the regulation.
Say it again.
Okay, they need it for the regulation. They need it for the completeness and accuracy of the financial statement. They need
and it's unique to their business.
Unique to their businesses.
Got it. So therefore, it needs to be reported or the data
exactly.
needs to be pulled in a certain way
so
that's unique to them.
We today solve like this scope and the world is like this.
Amazing.
So every time we a little bit more, very carefully, we always say, okay, we're very transparent about what we can.
Yeah.
What we cannot do. And sometimes we say, we cannot do, but we need to do it.
Right.
Okay. It's also fine, but very transparent on that. And we also commit to deliver, no matter what.
So that was my next question.
This way, it will look.
Well, Israeli tech delivers no matter what.
Exactly.
But do you ever worry that something's out of your scope and you come and say, hey, guys, like, I can't take your money. We tried and we don't think we can do it or we'll need more time. Or do you run into those because there's like a blue ocean. You're kind of going out there, not exactly sure how to do it. So do you run into those challenges every so often?
Every day.
Every day.
But no, I think you should be transparent with your client.
Of course.
They
don't know.
Yeah.
No, like,
exactly.
You can't get away with it.
Of course. And we are very concerned with our client. And as Ellie said, if we don't know how to do something, we tell them. We don't know how to do it, but we solve it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the project or by the end of the no matter what, we solve the problem.
Awesome. So as you continue to serve more customers and expand, is there anything new you plan on doing this coming year? Like, are you expanding your products? Or are you kind of letting your client lead you to expansion?
I think both. I think the product will be expanded.
Right. So what are you looking, how are you looking to expand? Are you expanding maybe in other industries outside, like in other markets too? Or where are you looking to take it?
No. So I think what we're going to do is we're just going to stay in our world of Cerence and Oxley. This IT regulation, but we're going to get to more spaces that we today, like mini spaces, micro spaces.
What do you mean? Give me an example. Just when you're about mini micro spaces.
Okay, so for example, you have one solution that checks all the users in the organization. Okay, we deliver it. There's another solution that checks if you have conflict between of those users. We're still not there. Customer asked them to do it. Okay, for example, next year we're going to meet with a lot of systems that we never met before, and we're going to implement it for them as well.
Amazing.
And challenges we have it. This is one way. The second thing we're going to do, we're going to grow our team, of course. We're going to do much more sales and marketing. Up until now, it was more like founder sales lead.
Right.
And work really hard for sales. So we're going to try to make it more a machine and deliver more quickly, because we deliver today very quick. And to do it more quickly, effortless, which today it's not the case. Today we invest in every customer what a lot of work. So this is the second thing we want to do. And of course, expand in Israel and the US as much as possible and get more customer and serve them better. So the idea is not just go big, it's go better.
You go better and deeper with your current clients.
Yes.
Right. So do you think your main growth is actually being able to do more for current clients?
Absolutely. So I think, if I would say up until 2021, the only idea of how to make a lot of money, it was, okay, let's take a huge problem, HR, finance, accounting, that fits to the whole world. And you have a huge TAM, and then you take a small piece and you get rich of it. Today, people a little bit understand that it's not so easy because you have tons of competition, indirect, direct, and so on. It's very hard to do it. Not everyone is monday.com that have your to-do list and everyone takes it, okay? But the contrary, you have, okay, those smaller TAMs like we have. It's much more smaller TAM, but you can take a bigger piece from the TAM and you can bring a lot of value to each of your customers and get more from those customers. So this is the idea, to serve them more, to get out of them for more, and to grow in depth. And I think this is at least our business strategy. And I think it's something that is much more appealing these days.
Amazing.
In the industry of ecosystem of startup. Okay. See customers, like companies that actually deliver and sales and
love it. Love it.
This is where we're going.
I love it. It's the classical business, but using all the new technology and the disruption and all the way. Amazing. If people wanted to stay up to date on Auditech and they want to follow you, what's the best way to follow you guys?
LinkedIn, our website.
Awesome. All right. Mm-hmm. We'll drop those links below. You can follow Joel Tech. You'll find that in the description. Sure. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.